everybody, and welcome to Resettled, A Human Journey, ECDC ACC's premier podcast. My name is Jariana Rodriguez.
And I am Nesia Munezero-Kugaya.
First of all, let me say to you all, happy holidays. This time of the year, we celebrate with our families, eat more than we need to sometimes, and partake in our own holiday or family traditions, which is why we wanted to take a look at how different cultures celebrate their traditions. This episode will focus on thinking about home. How do different cultures celebrate and keep their traditions alive here in the U.S.? We have invited here today Mohammed Al-Khatib. Mohammed is a Palestinian refugee from Lebanon who moved to the U.S. in 1999 and was naturalized as an American citizen in 2004. Mohammed is currently the volunteer coordinator at the Museum of the Palestinian People and works at the National Zoo for his day job. That's actually very interesting. So thank you so much for sharing your time with us today, Mohammed. I just want to start really by asking you to tell us a little bit more about the museum. How did it start, and what can visitors hope to see there?
Sure. Well, thank you so much for having me on your show today. So a bit about the museum. So the museum has opened its doors in June, but before that, it has a long and an interesting history. It started off as a traveling museum or a traveling exhibit called mm-hmm. Bethlehem Beyond the Wall.
Right.
And yeah, wow. So
I like that name.
Yeah, it's a very good name. It was started by Bshara Nassar, who's actually the executive director and the founder of the museum. Mm-hmm. His family has a very long and involved history with Palestinian resistance. They actually have a farm in Bethlehem, Palestine, called the Tent of Nations, where they do a lot of peace activists and peace building workshops. And the farm itself was slated for confiscation by Israeli Defense Forces. But the farm refused to relent. And despite all the difficulties that they have encountered, they have somehow been able to persevere and continue on as a symbol of peace building. So basically, the museum is an offshoot of that movement. When Bshara did come to the United States, in his own words, he mentioned that there was no, he did not see any institutions that represented Palestinian culture, and he wanted to fill that gap. And the museum is a small, first, but meaningful mm-hmm. beginning for that.
Right. I mean, I can attest to that. It's a great museum. We had a great time, and they have so many beautiful works of art too, which mm-hmm. I did not expect. So absolutely, please feel free to go there. What are the hours of operation for the museum?
Sure. Currently, our hours are Thursday, Friday, and Saturday from noon to 6 p.m. Mm-hmm. We are, however, looking to open on Sundays and possibly expand more in the future. So that might change. But for now, it's Thursday to Saturday, 12 to 6 p.m.
Sounds like a great resource for the community. I haven't been to the museum, so now I want to go. Now I want to go see it for myself. So maybe I'll see you there one of these days.
They have tea, which is wonderful.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes.
In the museum?
Yes, we serve complimentary tea.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Very good tea, by the way.
I have never been to a museum where you can have tea, so I'm definitely coming. It sounds like we have so much fascinating stuff to talk about, but before we get to that, could you tell me or tell us a little bit about your life back home? What was a typical day like for you? If I know it's been a few years, so if you can talk about that far back, let us know.
Yeah, for sure. So I've never been to Palestine itself. I was born in Lebanon. Mm-hmm. I was born to a Palestinian father, and my mother's Lebanese. Because the Lebanese government doesn't recognize people born to Palestinian fathers as citizens of Lebanon, mm-hmm. despite my mother being Lebanese, because the citizenship is patrilineally inherited.
Right.
I never actually lived in a refugee camp in Lebanon, but soon after being born, we moved to Qatar, mm-hmm. Doha, Qatar, and I lived there until 1998, and I moved back to Lebanon, did my first year university there, and then I got my green card, and then I was able to come here.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What a story. So then, did you spend most of your childhood in Lebanon then?
In Lebanon and Qatar, yeah.
In Qatar,
so,
okay.
So, yeah. But I was, I mean, despite this, I was still a refugee. I did not have citizenship to any country.
Right.
So life was pretty precarious. For most Palestinian refugees, you know, I mean, my life was pretty comfortable for all intents and purposes, but we were always vulnerable to anything that could happen. My examples are, you know, I had family in Kuwait who were expelled from Kuwait shortly after the beginnings of the first Gulf War because Palestinian leadership, the Palestinian Liberation Organization, had sided with Saddam Hussein. And in turn, Palestinian citizens, I mean, sorry, not citizens, but Palestinians who were living in Kuwait were expelled.
Right.
So these were risks that we also encountered in Qatar and also in Lebanon. So life was pretty difficult and continues to be difficult for Palestinian citizens of Lebanon.
And did you come here by yourself? Did you come here with your family? What influenced your decision to come to the U.S.?
So basically we needed citizenship to a country and we got the green card. And that was like a golden ticket. You know, you don't dismiss that opportunity.
With your whole family then?
With my whole family initially, but they all went back.
Really?
Yes, so I'm here, now I'm left here, but my father and my brother now live in Qatar. My mother is now back in Lebanon, but only because she's taking care of my grandmother.
Okay.
So yeah, but we all have American citizenship now.
Okay.
So.
And so having lived in all that uncertainty of, you know, not... From the way you describe it, I'm assuming it feels like you don't belong to any one of those places specifically, even though you belong to all of them. Yeah. Also, it's that kind of strange middle where you, you know, you are from so many places and you start to wonder which one is home. How did you feel knowing that you were going to come here? What did you imagine or want your new life to be like?
It was exciting and terrifying at the same time. I'm not going to lie, I kind of protested. I didn't really want to.
Oh, really?
I was happy. I was, you know, university in Lebanon, my first year. But I understood the necessity for having to obtain citizenship. Years before, we had tried to petition the Lebanese government to give us citizenship, and that failed.
Right.
So this was even more crucial for us, for me, my father, and my brother, to obtain citizenship to a country, and the green card allowed us to do that.
Was it easy for you to continue your studies once you arrived?
Yeah, it was. I mean, I applied for universities here, and I transferred.
Okay.
I moved to Massachusetts, actually.
Yeah.
So I was in Massachusetts. Up until 10 years ago. So I was there till from 1999 to 2009.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah.
So being that this is the Christmas episode, I want to talk to us about common Palestinian traditions. What did you celebrate back home?
Oh, boy. So
can pick like one or two.
So, I mean, my family, I was raised Muslim. And Muslims typically celebrate Eid and Ramadan. Ramadan is not so much a holiday. I think that's a misconception. It is a month of fasting.
Yes.
And it is tough. Right. But we have in Muslims typically celebrate Eid twice a year. There are two Eids. There's one called Eid al-Fitr, which happens right after Ramadan. And the second one is Eid al-Adha, or Eid Festival of Sacrifice, which happens... I'm not 100% of the date because there are lunar holidays, so they change every year. But typically, Eid al-Adha follows the pilgrimage. So people who go do the pilgrimage in Mecca.
Right.
So I used to celebrate both, and it just involved lots of food, visits to family, and of course, kids begging for money.
Well, it sounds a lot like Christmas.
Yeah.
It sounds so much like Christmas.
Family asking for money.
And gifts.
For sure.
We actually, in my family, we grew up, we're Christian, and we grew up celebrating Christmas as a double celebration because it's also my dad's birthday. So we didn't do the gift thing.
Really?
We found that here in the U.S. What we did was, back home, we would get new outfits Everyone in my family would get a new outfit, and then we would eat all the food we don't normally get to eat. Or if we did normally get to eat it, we would eat more of it. But the whole exchange of gifts thing was new to me when I came here. So it sounds very, similar, and just family time,
And just to also be clear, I did have a lot of Palestinian Christian friends, and we would celebrate Christmas with them,
right,
and Easter too. I loved celebrating Easter, mm-hmm. The whole painting eggs. I mean, that's also pretty common.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amongst people who celebrate Easter, and so there are Palestinian Christians and Muslims. I mean, unlike other Lebanon, there are a little bit of religious tensions there between Muslims and Christians, or between Christians and of different sects and Muslims of different sects.
Oh, yeah.
Palestinians, we are very close. I mean, I speak this from my own experience. You know, it's like we're one big family, regardless of our religion.
Oh, great.
So how do you keep some of those traditions alive here in the U.S.? Especially now that your family is not here, what do you do?
So I am not I'm not probably the best person to ask this, because I've not really been as involved. I mean, so up until my involvement with the museum, I had kind of like lapsed my involvement with the community. I was very close to my, I had lots of family in Massachusetts, people who had immigrated there before me, my uncles, for example, so we were close there. But I mean, here I have a circle of friends, Muslim friends, and we get together and we celebrate. We especially for Eid, we will cook something,
right,
and have a communal meal.
Mm-hmm.
But admittedly, it's more of a challenge than,
right,
celebrating something like Christmas, which is so much more more ubiquitous and available.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, are there any customs from your home country that you were surprised are not as commonly celebrated here? And what did you find here that was surprising to you that you weren't used to before?
Do we have like another hour?
Maybe you can pick one American custom that was like weird to you.
Of course. So the act of gift giving itself was very alien to me. So in the Arab world, or amongst Palestinian culture, gift giving is seen as, people love to give. We're very giving people.
Mm-hmm.
Hospitality is our number one thing, and we try to outdo one another when it comes to giving. But here in the United States, I realized that customary to accept and receive, and people actually find it get offended if you turn down their gift. Whereas in Palestinian culture, the norm is to say no, thank you.
Really?
So we are like, no, thank you. Please don't. And that is kind of like an unwritten rule. Of course, eventually, you relent. So I was surprised, that I would go to like a Secret Santa, which I that's also another thing. I would give my gift and they would never protest. They'd be like, yeah, sure, thank you. And I was like, so that's, I think, one thing that I kind of came up with. But I totally understand that that custom,
right,
that in the Arab world it's customary to say no, to refuse politely at first, anyways.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas here it is customary to accept, and people get offended when you do turn them down, as I have learned the hard way.
All the gifts, yes.
So for people who are looking for community in the DC area, are there groups that Palestinians, I can't talk this
it's
evening,
okay.
But are there any groups that people can find to, spend time with and get back into the traditions that Palestinians normally celebrate together?
That's a pretty good question. We are very close-knit units. You know, we definitely take family very seriously as Palestinians. So sometimes it might be a challenge for, you know, a Palestinian student coming with no relatives to really fit into, at least, you know, into the Palestinian community without, you know, knowing somebody who's Palestinian.
Right.
But we do have a few, we do have a lot of events in around the DC area that cater to Palestinians. Each year we have a Palestinian trade show. Yeah, we do. And it's a really great way to meet and network with other Palestinians. You know, and we also have the Jerusalem Fund, which is also based here in DC, and they do host a lot of events. You know,
and there's the museum.
Yes, you stole the words right out of my mouth. The museum is definitely a place where we take community very seriously. I have tried as a volunteer coordinator to really drive home the sense of family and community. As I've said many times to our volunteers, it's more than just contributing to the museum, it's being part of a greater family.
Right.
And I take this very, very seriously.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I will also say you make a great museum guide. He's the one who guided us during the birthday. It was great. So I want to talk to you about homesickness. And this is the one question I knew I could, like, I had a lot of stake in, because I experienced that myself when I moved to the States, and it was very new and unfamiliar for me because, for example, when I moved here in 2014 to Connecticut, and I remember that the first few weeks it was like I couldn't breathe properly, like the air was stale, and there was nothing wrong with it. I realized when I went back home that it was because I couldn't smell the ocean anymore. I spent more than 2 years working as a hotel manager in a hotel like right by the sea, and I missed that. So talking about homesickness, did you experience that here? And can you tell us about that experience as well?
Oh yeah, I experienced severe homesickness, and I continue to do so. I mean, my heart really is back in Lebanon. I love this country. You know, I'm proud to be an American, but at the same time, most of my childhood was spent abroad. You know, I came here as an adult, essentially.
Right.
And so I still have a lot of family, a lot of memories, a lot of friends back in Lebanon, back in Qatar. And up until pretty recently, I have actually, I did not go back very often. Mm. And it was pretty difficult. I mean, just speaking, you know, I just miss the sense of family. You know, as I'd mentioned before, Palestinians take family very seriously, you know, and so being here, it's very isolating, you know, and the work culture, I know it does not need to be said,
yes,
but, you know, you're expected to work and prioritize that.
Yes, I do get that a lot. And I think that for homesickness, there is no cure, really. It's something that you have to live with when you're here, especially like I myself, like my whole family's back in Puerto Rico. So I'm just here with my husband and a few friends, and it's very hard to not be able to talk to your family members, to your mom, to your siblings, or be part of their lives. And that's, I think that's something that I'm always going to miss no matter where I go. So I get that. But I am going to move to a lighter question. It's actually my favorite question of the episode because it's related to food. So obviously, I think food is such a powerful way of staying connected to your culture. Can you tell us about one dish? Because I know there must be so many. One dish that always reminds you of home.
Oh boy.
Difficult question, I know.
Yeah, it is, you know, but it's a good question. I think my favorite dish, and this is not strictly a Palestinian dish, but it is definitely one that I grew up with, is it's called Nuchi.
Explain it to
you. Yeah, I will explain it to you, and I'll tell you a story around it. So Nuchi is basically crushed leaves that from a plant called, in English, the Jude Mellow tree. And basically, we take these leaves and we mash them up, and then we we boil them with cilantro, and it turns into this thick, gooey, but very delicious stew that you pour over rice.
Oh, okay, you
add,
you got me.
Yeah, you add garlic and chicken. Mm. Now, I mean, one time I decided to make this dish for my friends here in America, and it didn't go so well because, I mean, I literally had people, you know, staring at their spoons for minutes on end trying to decide if it, this was edible.
Trying to see what the gooey thing was.
And then I spoke to my mother about the incident afterwards, and she's like, "Ahmed, you're so silly. You don't cook this for white people. They're not going to get this dish." So yeah, lesson learned. But it is definitely one of my favorites. And every time I see it crop up in a menu or I go over to somebody's house or when I make it, it really reminds me of home.
So what you're saying is that you're going to bring us some.
Yeah, if you are, if you have the stomach for it.
I absolutely do. Yeah. What about you, Nessie? What is one dish that reminds you of home?
Oh my goodness.
Just one. You can only pick one. I'm sorry.
I don't know. Burundi has all of the food that you would eat here, just cooked differently. People always ask me, you know how Nigeria has like jollof rice or other things you guys probably have met before at somebody's house. We have, what if you ask me what are you making, I'll say rice and fish, or we don't have specific dishes that we...
what is the difference?
We don't have like specific dish names.
Okay.
But there are things that we... most people eat that I really do miss sometimes, like plantain, but not the ripe plantain. We cook the green plantain.
Thank you. Yes.
That you can cook with beans or with fish or and when I went home recently, somebody made it with a green. I don't know if it was spinach or a different kind of green, but it was the perfect dish. she cooked it for breakfast with tea, and I was thinking about it the whole day. I was like, this is just, and it's not the kind of plantain we cook back home is not the kind of plantain you can get here. So even if I try to remake it, it won't
it's
be the same because
it's
a different, completely different plantain.
I agree with you.
And it's just delicious.
Yeah.
But we don't have, you know how you had a name for your dish, and I'm sure you have dish names.
I am about to tell you.
Ours are described by ingredients. They are not, we don't have like this plantain dish, I don't have a thing for it. Like I don't have a particular name for it. It's just plantain and whatever's inside.
Okay.
So but you know, still
just,
really
I mean,
delicious.
Most Arab, Middle Eastern food or Arabic food also follows the same pattern. I mean, if that's a word. You know, like our names are basically descriptors of the plates.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, that's ours too. And you know, a lot of it is things you would eat other places as well, especially if you are on the African continent, but cooked differently, or maybe we don't use as much seasoning or as other people, or we don't use the exact same ingredients. But, you know, it's still delicious and you don't have a name for it.
Yeah.
You just know what's inside and you enjoy it.
It reminds you of home. And that's,
oh,
that's
yeah,
the
definitely.
And back home, like plantains are like our staple. Okay, rice, beans, plantains.
Right.
That's what we eat. But there's a dish called mofongo,
and
it's just that fried plantains, seasoned, and then you can have it with shrimp, chicken, skirt steak, whatever you want.
Right.
And it's just the one dish I always have to eat when I go back home, because that's when I can actually say, okay, now I'm home. After I have that dish.
For me, that dish is a fish that we can only get from Lake Tanganyika. So Lake Tanganyika is the second deepest lake in the world. Second or third. Now I'm forgetting all my life lessons. But it's one of the top three deepest lakes in the world. And you can only get this fish, we call it omukeke. You can only get it from Lake Tanganyika. And so when I go back home, it's the first thing I want to eat because that's the only place. Well, nowadays they can ship it here frozen, but it's not the same, you know? So when I go back, I want that, first of all, before anything else. Give me that, and then we'll talk about all the other. So what advice would you give to a refugee who is new, had to leave everything behind to be here?
Oh, that's a difficult question. I mean, I would say be strong, be confident. A lot of Palestinians who move here, they want to shy away. They think of American foreign policy, and they think, you know, that the world is against us. I mean, you know, they think. I mean, for years I thought of America as an adversarial entity, something that challenged my existence as a Palestinian.
Right.
So I say, you know, don't come here with that mindset. You know, there are a lot of Americans who are your friends,
right,
who are advocating for you and your well-being. On a more practical level, definitely seek out community, you know, and don't be scared to take advantage of the resources available to you.
Right.
These are things we learned the hard way. You know, we came here and we did not understand how taxes worked, you know, we didn't understand, you know, all of the about getting a job and,
right,
and all of these things, you know, American systems are involved and complicated sometimes,
right,
you know, so it doesn't hurt to seek out, you know, community services like what ECDC offers to bridge that divide for you,
right,
you know, and these are things we did not take advantage of, sadly,
right,
but that's advice. And of course, if you have family here, really try to lean on them. Of course, not, you know,
not too much.
Not too much. They might resent you afterwards. But definitely, you know, don't be scared to ask questions.
Right.
That is my takeaway. Don't be afraid to ask questions.
Yeah. And you made it through just fine. And I think at this point in time, you came so many years ago that things have changed slowly, and I think there are way more resources for refugees now than there used to be. And also, the internet helps so much, even for people who are not open to seeking so much advice from people.
Absolutely.
You go online, you have resources like USA Hello, which is the app you can put on your phone and find all kinds of things for newcomers. So all of those are means to help people navigate their new lives. And I think it's probably much easier for people who are coming now than it was for you. But look at you.
You
did it.
Yeah.
So do you have a message or anything you would like to share with fellow Americans that don't know much about the Palestinian culture?
I mean, my biggest takeaway is don't believe everything you hear or read in the media. You know, we are a resilient, wonderful, compassionate people. We love life, and, you know, give us a chance, you know?
Right.
Because I feel like, I mean, Palestinians, we get such a bad rap here in this country. You know, we have a lot of stereotypes leveled against us, you know, that we're terrorists or that we are anti-Western, you know. They overlook, you know, the real struggle that we encounter in our daily lives.
Right.
So, you know, so I ask people to be open-minded, to give us a chance, and to see us for what we really are, you know,
right,
as compassionate, resilient people.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's what anyone really can ask, that people look beyond what their stereotypes are and get to know the person inside out, because that's the only way to relate to somebody, especially somebody who's new. So
yes.
Yeah. Especially for Christmas, keep an open mind, your doors open. Listen to other people's stories. You never know what you might learn. Mm-hmm. So, Mohammed, those are my only questions for you today. This was a wonderful episode, and I thank you so much for joining us and sharing some of your culture with us. To find out more about this episode, please follow us on social media through our Facebook at ECDCACC. We have an Instagram account at ECDCACCDCMetro. We have a YouTube page, ECDCACCDC, or you can find this episode on our website at acc-dc.org. If you want to learn more about what Mohammed was saying and his story, please send me an email at yrodriguez@ecdcus.org. Now, thank you so much for tuning in for this very special episode, and we hope you join us again next month on Resettled, A Human Journey. Thank you, and happy holidays.